United States Institute of Peace, along with SiriusXM's POTUS Channel 124, now present their weekly podcast.
Murner Galik is the USIP, the United States Institute of Peace's senior policy analyst for China and also East Asia. She was actually just in the Philippines and is the chair of the study group on NATO and Indo-Pacific partners. Their report came out 2 months ago when the USIP convened an expert study group on NATO and Indo-Pacific partners. She joins us now. Myrna, welcome and good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks, Laura.
I'm glad that you're here. I know that there has been recently, in terms of the funding that has gone from Congress and this particular bill that was signed over the weekend, had to do with also aid to the Indo-Pacific region. Talk to us a little bit about why that would have been included and what's been happening.
Well, I think the Indo-Pacific remains a really important part of U.S. policy. You can see that with all of the emphasis that's been placed on the Indo-Pacific, most recently with the state visit of Japan's prime minister, and also which was followed by the sort of tripartite summit between Japan, the U.S., and the Philippines. So presumably funding for this region would have been in there, both because it's important and possibly also to remind everyone that while we're still focusing on Russia and on the Middle East, we haven't forgotten the importance of the Indo-Pacific.
So in terms of what is happening there and what's needed, I mean, tell me about the NATO interest in the Indo-Pacific region. It's both historic but also current.
Mm-hmm. So our report looks at relations between NATO and the formal partner countries it has there, and those are Australia, Japan, the Republic of Korea, and New Zealand. And we're examining how the ties between NATO and these countries are deepening amid Russia's war against Ukraine, NATO's growing awareness of the security challenges posed by China, and important structural changes in the international system, which include the return of strategic competition between the United States and China and Russia. So that's the context of NATO's focus on the region.
And then in terms of this is all, I understand, it's preceded the alliance's focus on China as a security challenge. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. So we make some findings and suggestions in the report in several areas. And one of them is this idea of NATO's history of engagement on the Indo-Pacific region and with its partners there. And despite China's assertions, NATO has a long history in the region. It precedes NATO's recognition of China as a security challenge by at least one decade, if you look at when the four partner countries signed partnership agreements with NATO in the early 2010s, and by more than two decades, if you go back to early Japan-NATO engagement in the 1990s, and to when these partners started working with NATO on Afghanistan in the early 2000s. So we suggest in the report, among other things, that NATO can do a better job of telling the story and setting the record straight here.
Well, what is the benefit of that clarity? And I know that sounds like an odd question, but and I know it's very nuanced. Why do you think failing to set the record straight has a detrimental consequence?
So basically, these days, you hear a lot, and particularly from China, but also from Russia, this idea that NATO is expanding. And one of the examples of this expansion is NATO's so-called efforts to enter into the Indo-Pacific. China really paints NATO's interest in the Indo-Pacific as new and as foreign and unfairly as all about China. But when you look at NATO's history of engagement on the region and with its partners in the region, that's actually clearly not true. And so, you know, making that story clear and setting that record straight undercuts China's ability to push misinformation about NATO in the region, which it's doing quite a bit lately.
Talk to me about the role of Australia in particular in the terms of bilateral relations.
With the United States? Or with NATO?
With NATO.
So Australia
I ask because I know that they're most integrated into NATO's military operational structure, right?
Indeed. So Australia has sort of contributed, other than NATO members, it contributed the largest set of troops to Afghanistan. It's well integrated into NATO's operations and planning, and it's actually attained the status of a special operations partner, which allows it to have better access to NATO planning and better access to NATO engagements and exercises. So that's really been helpful for Australia because I think they're quite interested in the idea that they're contributing to the security efforts of the alliance, and they want to also have an insight into what those efforts are going towards and some of the planning towards that. But each of these partner countries has been very engaged with NATO, all in different ways. And so certainly, I think the partners individually and as a group are clearly important to NATO. And in fact, although these partners belong to a group called the Partners Around the Globe, which is not a formal group, they're the clear standouts among that group. So they've really effectively become, even though it's not actually the case, but they've effectively become another regional partner grouping.
But is there an expectation that in the Indo-Pacific, among partner countries, that NATO will be a significant direct actor in the region?
No, not at all. In fact, partner countries expect NATO, rather than being a direct actor in the region, to coordinate with them on issues that of interest to the region, stemming from the region, or of mutual importance to partners and NATO. So they have no expectation of NATO coming in militarily into the region. And in fact, there are concerns among some countries that that would have a destabilizing effect. So certainly they're not expecting NATO to be a player directly in the region, but they are expecting NATO to pay attention to what's going on in the region security-wise, to engage with them on issues in the region and on issues stemming from the region, and generally to engage with them on issues of mutual interest.
And returning to the United States in particular, I know Congress has obviously then has provided some aid to the region, but is there something more that the United States Congress or our government should be doing in that particular region with respect to not only just the appropriation of funds?
Well, I think the United States again has made the Indo-Pacific a priority region. If you look at the Indo-Pacific strategy of the current administration, it lays out a number of things that our government should and could be doing, and which they are starting to implement now, 2 years after that strategy was passed. So yes, certainly, I think both Congress is aware of and the administration is aware of the real importance of this region to U.S. security and interests, and also of the importance of the engagement of our allies and partners in this region with our allies in Europe, which helps US security, certainly.
Really interesting. Thank you so much for joining us today. Got a really good take on what we need to know about the Indo-Pacific region in particular. Always very, very helpful. Myrna Galik, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks, Laura.
This podcast has been brought to you by the United States Institute of Peace and SiriusXM's POTUS, Channel 124.